just stop getting in your head so much, you know, and just do it. Like, instead of like thinking about doing it forever, just shut up and do it. Like, even if it just means like sitting with a sketchbook.
Hey, hey, it's Ruthie Sullivan. Welcome to this week's episode of the Ruthie Podcast, where I interview everyday women to learn how they're making a living. Listen to highlights of their current career, points and pivots they made along their personal and professional journeys, and the individual story behind it all. Join me and see how successes, failures, obstacles, and triumphs come together and offer courage to ask, now what, as they meet life right where it's at. Today, I'm interviewing Kim Hamblin. Thank you, Kim.
Hi, you're welcome. I'm glad to be here.
Oh, I'm so excited. So, Kim runs Rochambeau. Am I saying that right? Rochambeau Art
Farm?
Yeah,
Rochambeau Art Farm.
Rochambeau.
Rochambeau.
Art
Farm. It's rock, paper, scissors. That's what it means.
And where does that come from?
It's Japanese, I think. Rock, paper, scissors. And I think there's like a French one and a Japanese one.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's like the Rochambeau French is like E-A-U-X on the end, but the Rochambeau we use is just B-O
oh, cool.
on the end. Yeah. We're really easier. All that fancy French stuff for us.
For us English people.
We're English all the way.
So, and then you have the Art Science Farm,
yep.
right?
Yep, yep. The Art and Science is our cider and wine company. So we use, we grow some of the fruit here and then I forage for some of it and we buy a little bit of it too.
Very cool. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about Rochambeau and the Art Science.
Okay.
And how they come together.
The confusing story of the interwebs of the two.
Yeah.
So Rochambeau, I, you know, it's really hard to name things. And I really like the idea of like an art farm and just having like art around. And there was already an art farm around, which is really annoying. But oh, they didn't even have art, but whatever.
We're in
Oregon, of course. They had an art farm. But we have a rock quarry on the property. And I'm a cut paper artist. Even though I don't use scissors, I decided rock, paper, scissors was kind of cute. So I went with that for the idea
of
the farm
that.
Idea. So yeah. That's where that came from.
Yeah. And how did you get into that, your art specifically?
I actually started doing a little bit of art in college just to screw around. In high school, I hated my art teacher. It was like he was kind of a weirdo guy and he was just kind of a douchebag. So I didn't really like jive with art because he kind of turned me off of it. But in college, I just took an elective, you know, just thinking, oh, that'd be fun. Take a sculpture class, just screw around, you know.
Yeah.
An easy A or whatever.
Right?
And it was super hard, actually. Nice. Like one of the hardest classes I had.
Nice.
But it was great because it totally super challenged me. And I'm not a sculptor at all. But it was great. And then it led me into taking more art classes and just kind of going down the rabbit hole of drawing and doing drawing and then a little bit of photography. And then I just kind of wanted, I just fell into the mixed media sort of rabbit hole of things. So I used to be like a more of a found object kind of artist. And I still actually have a collection of my precious things of like lenses and like dead birds and stuff that
wow.
I have like weird boxes. Like there's a box in my studio called Dead Stuff. Like
it's
literally
dead,
got
stuff.
Dead stuff in it. Like, dark times, don't open the box.
Right. It's like my journals. No.
Yeah, no, the journals are down there too. I'm sure like, I'm like, please nobody go in there. But don't look in the dead stuff box.
That's so funny.
At least not being prepared. But then I wanted kind of more control. And so I was using a lot of like tin, like I would cut metal and use little nails on the metal and stuff. And then yeah. I kind of wanted more control over my media a little bit more because found objects is fun, but it's hard. We have to hunt for stuff. Like that's half the shit you have to do is just hunt for things. And it's like, it takes a lot of work to like find things, you know,
yeah.
that are like meaningful. And so I just wanted a little more control. So I started cutting paper. So that kind of transitioned in, but I still use the nails. So I take the paper and I'm not like a normal paper cutter. Like I'll cut the paper with a razor blade, but then, so I don't use scissors, I used a knife.
Yeah, oh, cool.
A little X-Acto knife, and then I'll cut it, and then I'll nail it down to plywood. So this was how I used to build things in my mixed media world. I would, like, cut it, and it would, like, build it onto plywood back. So I had plywood, it was just like, you know, I'm not really a deep thinker. It was just kind of like, here's what I have. I'm going to build it and do my thing, you know?
Oh, I love it.
And then it just kind of worked. And like, you know, you just kind of keep going with something until it stops working, I guess. So,
right, yeah, throw something until just it stops working.
Keep going forward. Plow ahead.
Plow ahead. Good on plow.
Right, right.
Well, so I was on your Etsy site. Mm-hmm. And so are those pictures of art that you've done?
Yeah. Yeah. So those are the prints. So I do, I'd get some prints made of some of them. So I have I have a collection of them, but yeah, I should have them out here, but I don't, well,
record. Maybe someday.
I've got some cards, but they're not actually out. I have them in the back for only people who know about them and have to ask.
Well, now I know. Now I know. I know what I'll be doing when we're done.
I'm not great at marketing. I'm great at thinking about marketing, and I'm not really great at actually the follow through. Like, I made the cards, and I have put them out like twice.
I love it. So part of our power is knowing where our strengths are.
Right, right. Somebody else could just do that for me. That'd be great.
Yeah, we become familiar, and then we outsource.
Right, right.
We just have to follow that one through.
I know. Right? The outsourcing is hard. Like, it's hard to find people you trust to bring into your inner web, I think. And,
yeah.
And, you know. No, especially when you live rural, there's just not that many people.
Yeah.
I mean, I like a few people who are here tonight, so that's nice, but.
One of them?
Yeah, you're one of them. Don't worry, you're cool.
Hey, thanks. I love it. Do you call it cut paper assembly? Is that
call it? My friend came up with, like, I can't remember the French of it. She's French, and she's very cool. She came up with, it's like, the way she said it, she was like, cut paper assemblage. Like, what?
How do you say that in English?
Yeah. She was like, ooh, can we say that with a French accent? That's cool. But
that's really
no,
cool.
I just seem pretentious if I say it with a French accent. But yeah, so she came up with the cut paper assemblage thing. So
I love it.
I still do that.
So if people like what they see on mm-hmm. the Etsy site, can they commission you to do one like that?
Sometimes. I'm not really great on the commissions.
Meaning why?
Because honestly, I just get too buried in my other projects. Like, kind of how I tend to do stuff is, like, I'll get really into one thing, and then like this season's harvest. So I'm like, I'm harvest. Like, that's mm-hmm. my life mm-hmm. coming tomorrow, not today yet. I should be there already, but I'm not. delinquent harvest person right now. But harvest is upon me, and I better get my shit together and get out of it. But then, like, in the winter, I'll do more art. And, you know, for me, mostly it's like I have to set up, like, an art show.
Yeah.
Like, if I set up, like, a show at a gallery or even a coffee shop or wherever, it just kicks me in the ass to get stuff done because I can't, like, then I am motivated. I'm kind of like the... In some ways, I'm like a little bit of a people pleaser like that. Like, I have to, like, I don't want to disappoint somebody. So if I set myself up to, like, force myself to do something, I have to do it.
Yeah.
So so it makes it work for me. Like, but I know that about myself. So if I don't do it, then I'm just perpetually a little bit lazy and I won't do it. I'll just, like, I'm not somebody who, like, sits around and makes art without having an end goal. Like, I wish I had that instinct, mm-hmm. but I don't. Like, in my future self life, I feel like if I just pretend like I could have, like, if I did art for 3 hours every day and, like, it's just, like, so impractical, like, and it does not work at all.
Because, like, when I do it,
I, like, feed on it and I just do it for, like a month straight.
You
and I'll just
fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'll just go. And then I'll get, like, to a point where I have, like, I have to start, like, stop starting new things because I have to finish the stuff I've already started.
Yeah.
So, like, I'll be working, like, you know, five or six different big pieces at a time. And the deadline for the show is, like, you know, a week away. It's like, okay, finish this shit because you got to, like, wrap it up.
Do it,
like,
do it.
The worst one, I actually, like, pulled an all-nighter just a few years ago. And, like, I'm 48. Like, I can't do all-nighters anymore.
You're cooking coffee to your IV.
Oh, my God, it was horrible. I was like, oh, the BBC late night's kind of great. Like, like, shoot me. Why am I doing this? It was like, it was probably 5 years ago.
The older I get, the more I value my sleep.
Oh, my God. The next day, I was trashed.
Right?
It's like, how do people do this?
It's like, not even the next day for me. It's like the next two or three days.
It took me a couple of days to get back in the groove of like,
why did I do that?
Yeah. too hard.
I
really try not to do that. No, I try to like give myself enough time. But I like the trick is to stop starting new things. But sometimes a new one is like so more appealing. And it's usually like the last piece I finish is the one that I love the most. Because I've let those other ones go already.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I made that 2 days ago. I'm out. Like, this new one is my favorite one.
Yeah, right. It's the creating in you. You have to create something new.
Exactly. Yeah. And I rarely get attached to them. Like, every once in a while I get attached to one. And I always like, that's the worst part about showing them is that like, I kind of have to put it for sale at a gallery. So if it sells, you're like, no, somebody took my baby.
Goodbye. You're like, can we keep this an open adoption? Can I come and see this baby occasionally?
But then I just had one that was like, I kept one for, it didn't sell at the show. It was a big piece of a vulture, honestly. It was like this giant vulture piece and it was really cool. And,
very cool.
And it was just like kind of long and skinny with like the wingspan, exploded wingspan. It was really pretty, but I got kind of attached. It was the last one I made. And so I was attached and it didn't sell. So I was like, yes, I took it home and I hung it up. And then one of my friends loves vultures. And so I showed it to her. And so we kind of bonded over. She's like, if you ever want to sell that, let me know. So like, I'm like, all right. So like, a year or two later, I was like, all right, I think I'm ready to let it go. I'm like, do you want it? And she's like, yeah, I totally want to buy it.
Yeah.
So she ended up buying it. So now it's in her house. But it's funny because I just like, I needed it for like a little bit. And then I was like, oh, I'm done.
I bonded.
You know? Yeah. It's good to let it go, you know?
I like it.
I think it's nice to rehome things to other people because, you know, it brings joy into their lives. And I don't need that much of my own art.
Like, right. You know, I lived in Naples, Florida, and when we would drive out in the estates is what it was called when I lived there. It's like the pieces of property that had 5 or more acres.
Oh, yeah.
And we would look. My kids and I would look for the vultures in there because they look so beautiful.
Yeah, we found a bunch of circle here. Yeah.
Their wings are just incredible. And then you look at them up close and you're like, wow. Ooh.
I know. They're like, scary as hell.
It's kind of like an elk. Or not an elk. It's kind of like a moose. Like moose are weird and funky looking.
They are really weird.
But they're so cool. Fascinating how vultures are to me as birds go.
We do have a lot of vultures here, the circle.
Yeah. And on the farm.
Yeah. Actually, I have a picture of the stage. It's got like a couple of posts up above the stage out here in the field. Uh-huh. And when we were just building it. And so the posts are up and there's like 3 vultures sitting on the posts. Like,
one on each one.
I was like, oh my God. I drove up. I was like just coming up to do something. And I was like, I like snuck up on them.
I
was like,
I can see it now. I can envision it now. The pretty red lipstick, blonde hair, ponytails.
Coming for you, little elk. They're cool.
That's super cool. So tell me about the farm. What do you do on the farm? I'm not talking art. Well, I want to hear everything.
Okay, yeah.
But I'm talking like what you grow, what you...
Okay. The lower field, so it's about 50 acres, and the lower 10 or so is in hay, so it's a hay crop, and that's where the rock quarry is, and it's like that's where we hold a music festival down there, so that's the quarries in that lower acreage, so that's maybe an acre or so of it, maybe not quite an acre, maybe 3/4 acre or something, and then the rest is like a hay field, so it's kind of got this weird cliff and sort of like some pollinator habitat that we put on top of the hill. So it's got like a kind of mixture of stuff. And then up here in the upper field, it's mostly fallow in the big field. Because we're just kind of, actually we have a herd of elk that come through.
Oh, cool.
So we just kind of are letting it go back to its like more natural way. And we're hoping that the elk kind of, they hang out, like they come through and like chill out. So it's like some of the stuff we have in here is like for them. So it's kind of fun. Yeah. Except for we also have apple trees, which is something you don't want the elk to eat. Awkward. So that's all fenced in. So we have like a big fence around.
Isn't
that
an electric fence?
No, it's just a really big fence. Actually, don't tell the elk, but I think they could actually totally push it down because it's not like we meant to put the big fence over it, like on this side. Uh-huh. Most of it's like a permanent fence, but then like half of it is like, or 2/3 of it or a third of it or something is like a temporary fence. And that's, of course, on this big side, like where they would come in is the temporary fence. Because we weren't sure, like, do we want to expand? Do we want to leave it?
Don't know
elk,
this.
Shh, no. Don't don't need to listen to this. Eliminate this part, the elk are listening.
When I moved to Louisville from Naples, Florida, I moved up to the Louisville area, and I love gardening. In Florida, it's really hard to garden, you know?
Yeah, it's just a weird climate there.
Yeah, like you can really grow some things really, really well, but it's hard, and then you have to constantly be monitoring the soil. It's not like you can kind of set it and forget it. It's like you have to really watch it, you know? And so when we moved up to Louisville area, I was pregnant at the time, and I plant all these bulbs for tulips because you can't have tulips in Florida either. So excited. And we plant our garden, and the tulips start blooming. I'm looking out. We had a Cape Cod style house, and I remember we're sitting at the dining room table, and I look out, and there's five deer like chomping
little
off
bastards,
the tops.
Yeah.
Yes. I was like, what?
Yeah, they love tulips. I can't grow tulips here because they will decimate them.
Yeah.
Because we have deer too, but
yeah.
They will, yeah. The elk actually are more, their threat is actually their feet more than what they eat because
they usually don't
come through. Yeah, they come through in the winter. So I heard them the other night for the first time. And what's the date? Like early September. So they usually start coming in now. But the garden's like starting to die off anyway. So like if they came in right now and decimated the perennials, like whatever.
Yeah,
you know?
Right. And the growing season.
Yeah, yeah. But in the winter is usually when they're in there. Yeah. So, but there's like the hoof prints are the what damages.
Mm-hmm. Makes
so
sense.
They're just like crushing it.
Kind of
like, oh my God, you're huge.
You're massive.
You just massively trampled that poor bush.
Yeah. But, well, you know, we put in, we kept putting a higher fence each year. The deer would just jump it to get in our vegetable garden. And finally, we were told just put an electric. Like just a low one. So we put one that was only 4 foot high, and then we had like it had one line and then another lower and then one that was kind of just a little bit like above the ground. So like that, like rabbits and stuff. Anyway, they left and it was solar paneled. And they could feel it, so they would leave it alone. It was interesting.
That is cool.
But the most danger, I mean, it was really mild, of course, but my son.
Oh, no.
My son did grab on with a line of his friends. He's like, oh, it was strong, Mom.
Cool.
It was definitely memorable.
You're like, well, I told you not to touch it.
Okay, so do you do any animals?
Oh, we do have some ducks and some chickens and one singular goose. But I'm scared to death of geese. Actually, I kind of... geese are mean as hell, and they scare me a little bit. But this goose is actually super nice.
You can totally take on the goose.
She's really sweet, and she's actually more scared of me than I am of her.
Oh, okay.
So she, like, I'll walk near her, and she'll be like, and she'll like walk the other way. She'll like slowly walk away from me. All like, I'm like, no, I want to pet you and love you, and she's like,
not today,
not touching me ever. Come on,
not today, and probably not tomorrow. Making no promises forever.
Well, there are cute ducks and chickens, but we used to have sheep. And we've had cows, we've had sheep, we had goats, and we planted a bunch of apple trees. So
we can hear Baxter.
Yes, that's the dog, Baxter. He's my big farm animal. I don't know what he's growling at, but and now we have cats, cats and dog and a few birds. But
oh, cool.
yeah. So it's fun, but I'd like to get some sheep back, but probably we gotta let the apple trees grow up a little bit. So once the apple trees are a little higher, because some of them are pretty young, so once they get bigger, then we'll run sheep under them.
Oh, nice.
And have more of like a agroforestry kind of thing, because we have about 10 acres on the other side of the field that are also apple trees, but they were like planted from seeds, so they're gonna all be their own individual variety. Apples are cool because they like are unique from seed. So you can take a seed, you just eat your apple at the grocery store, and every single seed in there is going to be a different variety than the parent.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so they're all unique.
So you buy a Pink Lady apple, it's going to, each of the seeds could be a different variety.
Yeah, and depending on what else it was pollinated with, it'll have like some characteristics of that parent, but whatever else it was pollinated with, it will be part of that. So you could have... it could be a more delicious Pink Lady, or it could be a really crappy Pink Lady. I don't know. It could be anything, you know? So it's really kind of fun. Like, and for cider doesn't really matter what you know, it matters to a point, but I'll take that back. It matters. But like flavors, like, you know, most of the seedlings that you plant aren't going to be like really great eating apples. Mm. But for cider, like if they taste crappy, it doesn't really matter, because it's like sometimes the really bitter ones are actually kind of make really interesting cider, or really tart ones are kind of interesting cider too. I still forage for a lot of stuff, but
explain like for the listeners what foraging is.
This foraging is. The East Coast people who forage for apples are like literally like in the forest, like, because East Coast, you know, the whole Johnny Appleseed thing. Like, there was actually, like, apple trees, like, in the national forest. Like, they're like, protected forests, and there's, like, apple trees throughout them. Oh, here, cool. Like, our forests are not really like that. It's a different... different tree species and stuff. We just don't really have a lot of fruit trees necessarily, but like on like hedgerows of farms, like, you know, because anytime a deer poops one out or whatever, they'll be planting seeds wherever they go, right? So like the elk herd is eating my apple mash in my field, they'll come over and plant seeds for me in the forest. So like, you know, there's apple trees all over the place, but most of them are like wild apple seedlings. So they just didn't get cut down because they were like on that forest edge. So like they'll be like the edge of the farm field and the farmer just ignores it because it doesn't want to mess with it or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it adds habitat, you know. So there'll be a lot of cool varieties in those hedgerows. So I'll drive around and like look for cool trees. I'm a little bit of a stalker. So like, what is this? I'll pull over and like try some.
She stalks on the dun, side. Dun, dun.
Yeah, pretty much I do. Yeah,
that's really cool.
I'm a stalker for good.
Just only for apple trees.
Only for apple trees.
You know, occasionally other things. I did find some really great red flesh elk. Don't listen.
Right.
Sneak up on them. They're pretty like sensitive creatures. I don't think I could actually sneak up on them. I'm way too loud. I'm not a sneaky human like at all. They'd be like, we heard you when you opened the door. We ran minutes ago. They are cool.
I love it.
Well, the herd is like 120 strong, so there's like a lot of them.
That's impressive. Yeah.
So when they run, they're a little bit intimidating.
Well, 50 acres. That's a lot of land. Yeah, yeah. You got room to share. Well,
they do this whole circuit, so they're barely even here. They go on other places, but they like to come through in the winter. So yeah, it's cool when you see them. I don't actually see them that much. I hear them more than I see them, because they at night they kind of like the babies call to the moms. Like, I don't know if it's just like probably just seasonally. I don't really know their life cycle that much, but yeah, the babies like make this like really weird, eerie like wee. Like kind of like it's like dolphins a little bit,
yeah,
like this weird dolphin noise sort of. I'm like, what the hell is that, you know? And dolphin, I figured out it was the elk. Yeah. Weird, but
interesting. Yeah, yeah. Life on a farm.
Yeah, but so they cool. They do like to eat apple trees, so we definitely have to keep them out of the orchard.
Yeah,
so sorry elk, but
sorry. Yeah. And so, okay, so that leads us to the apples, lead us to the cider.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what we're, like, tonight, I'm sipping on the cider.
We
had a flight of all these different ciders that are incredible. They're all, and do you do the pears, too? Uh-huh. You grow pears as well?
Yeah, we have some pears. Most of the joke with the pears is it's pears for your heirs because they take so freaking long to grow up. So, like, you know, you plant them in maybe 20 years, you can get some pears. But usually it's about 10. But yeah, we do have a couple of pears out there right now, but like literally like a couple, meaning like five.
Yeah.
Or like eight maybe.
We have a little pear tree at my house in Utah, in Salt Lake. And I think I got like 20, maybe.
Oh, see, that's
something like
good.
That. Right. And it's not, I don't think it's 10 years old, you know, so I don't know what kind it is.
Though. Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes they're on rootstock and stuff. They're like we're on semi-dwarf rootstock, so it grows a little bit slower. Mm-hmm. So it takes a little bit longer, but the trees live longer. So we planted it more by like, you know, just for climate resilience, and mm-hmm. we don't have a lot of like water to be watering anything on like a, you can grow like, you can get them to come faster, but they have to be on this tinier rootstock and they take a lot of additions. So you have to like farm differently. You have to add a lot to it because they're like really tightly compacted into like orchard rows. Basically, it's kind of like almost like grapes. It's on like it's on trellising, and it's very very tight, and but all that tight, it's just like not super natural way to grow. And so we try to do things a little bit more like nature, sort of like a permaculture, I guess, but like light permaculture, but sort of like mimicking more how it would grow in the natural world. So, which is partly like the fun of the seedling orchard, because the seedling stuff is like, and they tap down. So like when you plant an apple seed, it just throws like a tapper down. So it just does this like boom into the ground, and it just, and so it can grow. So those trees can grow like, you know, 50 feet tall, where like you don't want that kind of tree in your orchard because it's impossible to pick when it's mature, but they can live for 100 plus years, you know?
Wow.
Whereas like if you were to grow in like a high density orchard, it would, you know, you might you might get 20 years maybe off of them. Uh-huh. So, and you have to water them all the time and blah, blah, blah. So,
so it's kind of like the, like finding yeah. that mix in between, like yeah, longevity exactly. and the ability to get to
it's
the
like,
apples.
Yeah. So we still, and we'd buy some fruit from a couple different farms that are organic or biodynamic. And then some just unsprayed orchards that I pick that have been kind of neglected, and I'll just pick them.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, I've got what a couple random
ones. What does biodynamic mean?
Oh, it's like kind of witchcraft farming. It's
my friend just posted an Instagram post a while ago. Well, I was looking through her Instagram, and she said, "We are the daughters of the witches you forgot to burn." I laughed.
You're like, so there. It's like biodynamics. Like it's kind of interesting. Like, I mean, there's a whole like almost like religious aspect of it, which isn't something that like we really aspire to, but it's but the farming aspect of it is kind of interesting. It's basically all about the microbial like life of the soil. So it's about feeding the soil more than it is about feeding the actual plant. So you take care of your soil and it takes care of the plant, right? So
yeah,
if your soil is healthy and your soil is doing the right stuff, it's gonna grow a better plant. So but there's a lot
kind
of other stuff
symbiotic
there, like, yeah,
relationship
exactly,
between
yeah.
the plant.
Well, the whole
soil.
Idea of it is that they want like the farm to be like its own ecosystem. So like the farm, so any additions that you, in, this is like in a perfect world, most biodynamic farms like who are production agriculture do not do this, but in a perfect world, like the idea is that like your manure that you get from the farm would be from the animals that you raise on your farm, and then it would go into the system that way, and it would be all like all the nutrient cycling that happened would happen within the farm instead of bringing manure from your local cow operation in and gotcha. Letting it come in, which is what most people have to do because it's really hard to manage animals and have agriculture. It just takes a lot to do multiple things
yeah.
on any kind of scale.
Yeah.
So even on small scale, it's really hard.
Yeah.
Because, you know, usually time
for
certain things.
Do you know the documentary that's on, I think it was on Netflix, The Biggest Little Farm?
I have not. I watched part of it.
Way?
I fell asleep, actually.
So I haven't actually completed it. But my son he's like, "Mom, you have to go. You have to watch this. It's incredible." And I just saw the trailer for it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, I just forgot about it till now. I want to go watch it.
I think it's... They had a lot of money. You know, it's different being a poor farmer.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, like, you know, you go into it. And same with permaculture, honestly. Like, I love some of the aspects of permaculture. But it's so damn idealistic. And when you're actually doing it, it's so much harder. Like, I remember going to this conference, this farming conference, which is an awesome farming conference in California called EcoFarm. And it's great. But there was this like biodynamic thread of it, like that happens. And so we went to this like biodynamic mixer, you know, like they do these mixers and shit. And so we went to this mixer afterwards. And I was chatting with this guy who was like just like so tight about the biodynamic. Like he was just like obsessed about da, 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 they have to do it this way, this way, this way. And I was like, "Oh, do you have a farm?" And he's like, "No, I don't have a farm yet, you know." And I was like, "Oh, well, do you have a garden?" "No, I don't have a garden."
Your credibility.
Turns out the guy like lives in a freaking apartment, like building, like in an apartment, and doesn't even have like a fucking potted plant, right?
I was gonna say, does he have a planter box?
No.
That's
and I was like, "Are you serious right now?" Like I mean, sometimes it's really good to like, I think the theories are yeah. great, but sometimes practicing is so hard.
Right. And it's awesome yeah. to understand the theories, but yes. it's not beneficial until you
and
actually
I think
put
sometimes
them in
movies like that, like, I mean, I think there was some dark parts of that movie too, which I think they did a better job of balancing out. Like it wasn't all great. It was sometimes it was really hard, right? And but I think it's like, you know, the realistic thing is if you don't have any money and you're going to get into farming and think you're going to make it, like your chances are pretty low. It's expensive to farm. I mean, our orchard looks like shit because we just,
yeah,
it does. Like,
it looks beautiful to me.
It's like the contractor who never takes care of their house. Like, you know, it's like we take care of other people's property, but we're like, tractor's been broken all summer. So it's like, whatever, we'll just let nature happen, you know?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
like, oh God, you know? But so it's like, it's always like, it'd be nice to have like an influx of like $100,000 or something just so we could buy some decent equipment.
Right. I would probably get an influx of 100,000. Right?
Wouldn't you? I could do a lot. I could spend it so fast. Like
easy.
I mean, Dan could probably spend it faster because he'd be like, one tractor and some implements, done. Like, what? No, you're going to buy a used tractor. We need to make that money go further.
Right. You know, I was down at Lake Powell in southern Utah and with some friends, and our boat had issues. So we ended up having this houseboat kind of like bring us in. And so we're on this nice group of friends, like, let us get on the houseboat. So we're meeting all these new people. And one of them was a farmer. And that summer it rained and rained and rained. And he said, I just had to come on this trip and just know, like, there's nothing I could do about it. It's ruining my crop. And he said, that's the thing about being a farmer too, is you kind of, on the good years, you have to plan for the fact that there will be bad years.
Yep.
And you have to be strategic about your saving and you're working with it.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, what a lot of emotional acceptance.
Yeah. Well, and that's part of when we bought this property, because I own the property next door, and then we bought this property in 2012. And I mean, that was only 10 acres and this is 40 up here. So it's like, when we bought this, we're like, well, what are we going to do with 40 acres? Like, that's a lot of land. Dan's a grape grower, but like, he's got a degree in viticulture and stuff, but he's like, you know, it's so expensive to grow grapes. So that's what got us into apples originally. It was well, what do we want to like grow? Okay, I just need to make sure that I have a wedding. There's a wedding down in the property right now. Make sure it wasn't like a high maintenance need. It was fine.
She does weddings too.
Yes, there is actually a wedding happening right now. I just want to make sure like that text was not somebody saying, oh my God, something happening right now. I got to get down here. You know.
So she fails.
It's fine.
We'll know where she goes. That or the bathroom. One of the two. No, just kidding.
Whichever happens first.
So do you grow grapes then too?
We have a tiny bit of grapes. Yeah. We buy most of our fruit for grapes, because grapes are really expensive to farm. And honestly, it's the trellising, because you have to put the trellising in, and it's trellising is so expensive. Mm. It's just like, that's just like posts and wire. But it's like, I can't remember what it costs. I don't want to throw a number down, but it's like thousands of dollars an acre just to do that. And like, we don't have any money. Like, we literally like begged a friend with a backhoe to dig a hole for us. And Dan like grafted all the trees himself. And some of the fruit we got sticks from friends. And apples are cool because it can, like, you can graft them and make new, you know, you can make new trees pretty fast and pretty easy. And it's not really super complicated to graft. It takes a little bit of a knack and getting used to it, but it's kind of cool.
You
can just, you know, make your own trees pretty fast. So we, and then I would find trees that we liked that were just like wild seedlings, and we'd make up names for them and put them in the orchard. So there's some that were like, wait, I have no idea what they are. They're like, wooden number three or whatever, but because we don't know, but just named after the property owner or whatever. Uh-huh. So there's a few of those and then some English and French varieties and stuff, like some really crazy bitter stuff. And then some weird peri pears and stuff like that. But But we just did it all like as cheap as humanly possible, basically.
Oh! Oh! Oh my gosh. That was her cat that came jumping onto my soundboard. And I'm so happy to meet you. Hi, what's your name?
That would be Gerald. He's kind of a punk ass.
He's clearly a punk ass. He just came. So we're on the farm and we've got this Jimmy rig. Audio like kind studio.
Of, a kind of a foam. It's like a foam booth.
Board. And it just came collapsing down.
Scared the hell out of
both of us. Nice job.
Hi, Gerald. Gerald's a little bit of an acrobat.
Well, he was climbing up the outside of one of these.
Oh, was he?
What do you call these? This dome?
Oh, they're like old greenhouse hoops.
Oh, yeah.
So they're like repurposed hoops from a greenhouse.
He's like, I'm not done with you. Yeah. He's like, get over here,
Gerald.
Again.
Come down here.
Gerald, that's a perfect name for that kind
Gerald.
Of cat. Hey,
Gerald. Gerald, get off the rock. That was from, was it Dory? I think it was Dory, that little like kids movie.
Uh-huh.
And they're like, it's the seals, and they're like on a rock, and they're like, Gerald, get off the rock. I like these asshole seals. And then like Gerald's just kind of like, get off the rock. Anyway, so we had him as a kitten, and we're like, so we like, let's call him Gerald.
Okay, so you do the farming, and then so the wine that you make, how much wine and how much cider do you make every year?
You know, it kind of varies year to year, but it's usually about like 1,500 cases a year. I don't know, like gallon
volume.
Dan does the reporting, so I don't ever have to look at it, which is great because I'm horrible at that.
You're an artist.
Yeah, I'm not like, I am not the bookkeeper. Analysis. I'm not the data person at all. Like my pile of papers is big and broad and not for the week.
Yeah, right.
But so that's Dan's job. But it's about 1,500 cases. Sometimes it's a little bit less, sometimes it's a little bit more. But normally this will probably be a big year. Last year with the pandemic, we kind of like slowed our roll just a titch because, you know, we weren't sure what's going to happen and like how, you know, the industry was going to recover. I mean, alcohol sales were fine, but
of course.
Yeah.
Keep everybody safe.
But, you know, like a lot of our distributors, we distribute in various states and some of them flexed better than others because some of them were really restaurant driven distribution. And so, you know, of course, a lot of restaurants were shut down. So it wasn't, they had to like shift their side. And so it took a little bit for that to catch up and be able to get our products in different ways. So, but it's pretty much come back around now. I think it was a lull and then it came back pretty fierce. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens this winter.
Yeah, right. But, I know with the new outbreak and just watching everything.
It's hard to know.
But also I think with this new outbreak, realizing what people can and can't handle and what people want and don't want and what we can produce and, you know.
Yeah, it's been really interesting to see how adaptability has been like kind of a key for people, you know. I feel like I've been self-employed for so long that like I'm just kind of like, oh, pandemic. Okay, let's just get to work, you know.
Roll
like,
with it.
Let's just,
roll
what are we going to do for, we can shift. Let's do this, you know. And in some weird, sick way, I kind of like it. Like, I like to live like on the edge a little
it's
bit.
It's the new. It's the new.
Yeah, it's like I live on like a little edge. There's a big spider walking towards you. Hi, buddy. Hi. First the cat, now you. Oh, my God.
Yeah, we have an actual spider, Daddy Long Leg, like crawling around saying hi, and now he's gone.
Yeah.
Bye, Daddy Long Leg.
Farm life, people. Farm life.
Oh, I have to pick him up all the time as a kid.
Yeah. Someone told me.
It's right there by you.
Oh, hi. You're really close to my face. Let's go that way.
So then how many, is that like, is the 1500 cases on average like, or ish, is that cider and wine?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So we do a lot of, I think this year we're doing more wine probably than cider, but most of the time we do more cider than wine. And then I think last year we did probably more co-ferment maybe than we did of either.
What's that?
That's a mixture of the two. So like in various degrees. So like the one that you're drinking, I don't know if that's what's in your glass right there, but the one that you're drinking is a Sauvignon Blanc and pear mix. So,
so good.
It's a quarter Sauv and three quarter pear. So,
okay.
So like that kind of stuff where you mix them a little bit together. So
say that again, quarter Sauv?
A quarter Sauvignon Blanc and three quarters pear.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's co-fermented together. Uh-huh. So that's kind of fun.
So yummy. So
kind of weird.
I like it. I like it.
Co-ferments are all the rage right now.
Well, they're lighter, right? So you can kind of enjoy them.
Yeah. Longer. Well, and that's kind of the nice part about it. If you're like a wine drinker, it's kind of nice. And, you know, our style of cider isn't really like super sweet style. So it's more like we make it like a wine, basically. I mean, cider is made very similarly to wine. So.
Almost like a kombucha mix. Like a wine kombucha.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The pear in particular is a little bit kombucha-y. It's got, pear wants to be like, it just wants to, it's got high acetic acid in it, which is like bit vinegar.
Yeah.
So it kind of wants to be that way.
Yeah.
So
it's a wannabe.
It tries. We stop it, but it tries.
I like it like that.
I like it like that.
So I hear you do real estate too.
I do have a secret real estate life.
I am a real estate agent.
I knew I did. I heard you say that earlier.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Okay. Oh, yeah. I did. I told you that.
Yeah. Yeah. You told me about your secrets. I got your secrets. Whoa. I do not do very much of it. In fact, I was actually about to let my real estate license go because I was, because, you know, fall is harvest, summer is normally the music festival. So, and winter is just quiet in Oregon real estate. There's just not really a lot normally. And then, so usually I would only be a realtor in the spring. So it's really, really hard to do part-time. And and I mean, I remember people always telling me that when I first started doing it, I was like, oh, shut up. It's going to be fine. And it is really hard to do part-time. Yeah. But
it's kind divided.
Of, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's hard too when you have like too many things happening. Like people don't trust you to do that at all.
I did. There was an owl. We are legit barn owl. On the farm.
That was a barn owl screeching. Dun,
dun, dun. It's so cool.
Come watch yourselves, people. Barn owl, here comes a barn owl.
Spiders, cats.
What's
nothing
next?
Nothing beats Gerald.
What's next?
I think that was impressive, Gerald.
He'll be back. Don't worry. Scare the hell out of us again.
Yeah. So real estate, though, you're kind of.
Yeah. I mostly just help friends. So I do like a couple a year, maybe, you know, it kind of ebbs and flows. Like sometimes I'll do like 2 to 3 and sometimes I'll do like 4 or 5 deals. And so it's just like a little supplemental income.
Yeah.
And I was going to not keep doing it because the cider business was kind of taking up more of my time. And it was just like, well, maybe I should do focus and stop doing so many fucking things and just do like a couple of things.
I mean, maybe.
I mean, not just like one, but like 6 maybe would be good. Maybe not 10. Maybe not 10.
Not 10. Let's cut back to 6.
We'll cut back the ones that like aren't making sense with the others. Like, you know.
They're actually competing.
Although those are sometimes the ones that make you money. So it's kind of like, well, that would be kind of dumb. And so the pandemic happened and we weren't sure what was going to happen with cider and wine. So, and then I had a couple of real estate clients who were like, hey, I'm thinking about selling. I'm like, in-state's license. So I reinstated my license and
nice.
Like, I got this, you know.
I got you.
Yeah. So I ended up keeping it active, but I was so close to my freedom. But
it's so close to freedom. You know, like when I think of Marie Forleo, do you know Marie Forleo?
Uh-uh.
Oh, I love Marie Forleo. If you like to listen to podcasts and business and
growing
your business, she's just phenomenal. But she talks about being multi-passionate, and you're definitely
totally. I've never been able to stop. Like, and actually, I dropped out of college because I just couldn't pick a fucking major. Because I loved writing, I loved creative writing, and I was doing a lot of writing, and I loved art, but I just like did not like my art classes that much. We're very much like, you know, they want to teach you
certain
different
kinds.
Things, and. Yeah. And like they were pretty rigid, actually. It wasn't like an art school; it was just University of Montana, and some of them were great, and some of them were super inspiring teachers. And there a couple of them were definitely not, and they did not want you to think outside the box at all. Which is so weird, right?
I know
it was super
art,
counterintuitive.
Right?
So it was kind of like, oh, I just want to do what I want to do, and so I just decided to like stop and do what
keep
I wanted
me
to do.
Box.
Yeah, fuck
no
you,
way.
Yeah, rev a little shit. So
we
probably would have been smart to finish the degree, but I did not. So I dropped out and became an artist and just did that for a while.
It's
so,
very fitting as an artist, and it's very fitting to get into the new thing. Right?
Yes. So, but yeah, I've definitely had a hard time. But you know, I think it also like breeds resilience. Like that's why like during the pandemic, I was like, oh yeah, just whatever. We'll just shift and do this other thing. It's going to be fine, you know. But Dan is like, you know, my husband is like much more always had a job and, you know, very, very much like not, you know, he wants to have a paycheck and not have, like, which is really great. But
I mean, it comes in handy. I mean,
kind of nice to pay the mortgage.
But I'm planning on going after that elk.
I mean, the elk is really right there. It's really big. Feed us for the winter. Bye. I'm not sure what I'm doing as far as like killing it or butchering it, but we'll figure it out.
Right. YouTube. We've got YouTube.
God, probably. The dark times of YouTube. Go deep there.
Exactly. I think it's really cool what you were saying about, you know, it breeds resilience.
Yeah.
And I think that's a lot about this podcast and just, you know, life happens and it hits us, you know, with surprises. There's
one
that gets away with that,
yeah,
you know, without
yeah.
it, you yeah. know, and it seems to come at the least expected times. And I think that that's really, really neat.
Yeah.
About, you know, just that ability to adapt, kind of what you're saying. And it was energizing, it sounds like, to
yeah,
what you were saying, I mean, it sounds like it was energizing to you.
Yeah, it's kind of I'm kind of a weirdo maybe about that, but
I think it's cool.
It's kind of like, ooh, it's the, kind of living on, I mean, I'm
game
always
on.
One of those people, like, I've always kind of lived a little on the edge, but I was sort of, like, raised that way a little bit, like, my mom was pretty poor growing up, and then, so I kind of, like learned, like, the edge of lifestyle, you know, like, ooh, like, scrapping for a little bit of money under the couch cushions or whatever, you know, and, like, so I was like, you know, so, but, you know, it's funny, because, like, I always feel like it also, like, in this, not to sound too wee-wee or woo-woo or whatever, but, like, the universe feels like it kind of takes care of me, like, I follow my passion, and then, like, I never, it always seems to work out. Like,
yeah.
Like I might fly close to the sun, but I like, it doesn't ever really burn me, you know? It's like a little bit, like I'll just, yeah. I think if we take risks and when you really feel like a real like pull towards something, I think it's good to follow that and not be too scared of it. Because I think if you never follow it, you don't know what happens. So what's, I mean, to me, it's like, what's the worst that could happen? Like, literally, my husband did not want to buy this piece of property. And he's like, no way, that house is scary. And it really was super, super duper scary. Like, one of the, like,
I saw real estate.
One of the top, one of the top two houses, worst houses I've ever seen. Oh, it was really bad.
I have a picture.
The guy was a hermit. It was horrible. It was horrible. It was like, and he died there probably, ooh, like, doing something gross. But anyway.
But I dig.
But I digress.
Back to them. We bought it.
But we bought it. But it was because I was like, I think he literally thought I was going to divorce him if we didn't. And because I was so like obsessed. I'm also a little bit obsessive. And I was driving by it a lot and like stalking it. But
so it isn't just the apple trees.
It's not just apple trees. It's houses. It's no, true. It's true. But I was like, no. I mean, we should just, I'm like, let's just try and like take the risk, you know, and see. So I wrote the property owner a letter, and because the guy had died and his family lived like in Virginia, and so it was adjacent to my other piece of property, and I've always like really loved this piece of property. It's really beautiful.
Oh, it's beautiful.
It's really pretty. It's got a nice view, and Dan's like, oh, what the house, there's no way we can do this. But I like used to be a house painter, and I've remodeled houses before, and I was like, oh, we can do this.
Yeah.
It was like so in over my head. It was horrible. It took me like, I'm like, oh yeah, but 6 months. Like literally it's not done. It's like, we bought it in 2012. It is now what, 2021. My second bathroom is unfinished. Some of the painting's not done, whatever.
You know what? We have a bathroom to use.
We got one. We got one bathroom. It's got a toilet in the second one. It's not a shower. Who cares? Who cares? Toilet's the important part. I literally got it to the point where I could refinance it with a bank because the owners carried a contract because it was like literally unfinanceable because it was so gross.
It was so bad.
It was so bad. Like there was no way.
I just showed a house recently, and I, you know, there's some that you're tiptoeing through and hardly breathing because you're scared to take a deep breath. And
you don't
that,
want to. Yeah,
you don't what commitment
want to.
You're making and taking that deep breath. You know?
Scary. Yeah.
I mean, so bad. I talked to a friend, an inspector, and I was like, oh my. And he goes, oh, I'm telling you, I've seen it all. I have seen it all. It's just amazing, like what you can encounter. You know?
Oh, my friend who was the one who came out to inspect it for me, because I had been working a lot with him, and I called him and he came out and he's like, if this was for somebody else, I would have already driven out of the driveway and left.
He's
like,
really?
This is bad. I'm like, bad. I'm like, I know it's bad, like, but just look at like the roof and the foundation and the siding, like ignore all the gross, like
everything else
cosmetics.
We can tear out.
Yeah, ignore all the. I just want to know like out. The foundation is solid, and
yeah.
And then he's like, okay, I'll give it a once over, and I'll try to ignore everything. And so he's like,
he's like,
actually, it's in pretty good shape. He's like,
really?
He's like, even though it had vinyl siding at the time, he's like, even the vinyl siding isn't bad. I'm like, you said that? Like, you hate vinyl siding. He's like, I know, but it's actually not that bad. Yeah, he's like, shit.
He said it with his outside voice.
Yeah, he's like, ugh, gross, but good luck, you know? Yeah, but it
and
looks
then how
great
long
now.
Have you been there?
We bought it in 2012.
You said that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, we didn't move in until 2013.
With those kinds of houses, yeah.
Yeah.
In a tent.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, it's a good thing we own the property next door because it was like really easy to come over.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was really great that the solar eclipse happened when it did because we had a big solar eclipse party here because the solar eclipse like was right over the farm.
Wow.
So it was really cool. So we opened it up and let people camp and stuff. So
did you have a festival? Like music too?
Yeah, we did. Like we did like a little mini one. And it was really fun. But we made enough money on that to pay for like the concrete and cidery because we were just building out the cidery. And like, I don't know. We actually refinanced when we refinanced the house with a lender. We actually pulled a little bit of money out for the cidery, but we couldn't like qualify for too much because we just didn't make that much.
Yeah.
Like at least not on paper with Dan's like job because you know self-employed people don't count when it comes to these things. So
like, work their tails.
It doesn't
off,
matter.
Right?
Like, you got too much weird shit in your past. Like there's nothing's gonna help. But nothing's gonna help. So sometimes things just work out. I feel like I've been really lucky, honestly. But
I really like that, like what you said about how the universe just it works out. Things really do. Like,
yeah.
Try, fail, get back
yep.
up. Try
yep.
again.
Yep. Yep.
But that
yeah, it's not because I haven't, like, you know, I'm not always lucky. Yeah. But I just keep pushing, like, you know, yeah. like, because sometimes if you just push through that little mini failure, like, there'll be something great on the other side, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think sometimes there's just, you're just ready. The time and the place is ready to make an impact. And it doesn't always happen, but sometimes it works out great, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we were going to build, like, these kind of pod things, like, right now, like, we're sitting in, like, a pod at the farm here. And so it's like a greenhouse, frame, like a little 10 by, what, 15 or something uh-huh. frame. And it's, like, covered with tarps, like these canvas tarps. But we were going to build like this anyway. And then the pandemic happened and it was like everything moved outside. I was like, yeah. Well, look at here. We are, where are you going to do this? This worked out real nice for me. Because yeah, so we just opened last summer. So
the pandemic kind of moves you to
yeah, yeah. things. Yeah. I think it'll be actually really super interesting at, like, looking back, like, anthropologically. I think, like, looking back on the pandemic will be really cool to see how it shifted humanity and uh-oh. How it shifted people's, like, just, like, random career choices. And mm-hmm. but also for kids, like, I think it'll be fascinating to see, because I have a 10-year-old. I think it'll be kind of interesting to see, like, because, you know, I think it's actually teaching kids kind of a little bit about how to shift, you know,
yeah.
because, like, you know, and how to be adaptable, you know, and I think that's a good survival skill that all of us kind of need, is the adaptability trait. And I think we all kind of get stuck in the rut a little bit, you know,
oh,
like,
for sure.
Go to work, pay the bills, go to work, pay yeah. the bills, take the kids to school or whatever, you know, and it's kind of good to, like, kind of throw a wrench in it sometimes and see, like, God damn, I've been miserable or whatever it is, you know, like, I feel like I've talked to a lot of people who are like, I just hated my job, like, why was I doing that stupid job? And I was like, yeah. you know, why were you doing that stupid job? Like,
yeah, why, like, are you doing
yeah,
that?
Yeah,
job?
Like,
yeah.
And I've just, I guess I've, my lifestyle has always been, like, to not do the stupid job and do what I want.
If
and,
it's not working.
Yeah.
Move on.
And, like, and there's a lot of jobs to do. And, like, why be miserable when you get to live this great life? And you could, I mean, I don't have a lot of money, but whatever, who cares, you know? Like,
oh,
I mean, retirement's scary as fuck, but, well, like, okay, but, like, I know people who die when they're 50, you know, like, mm-hmm. so why work some stupid job and, like,
yeah.
and just hate it? It's one thing if you love your job, like, a lot of people love their job and it's inspiring for them, but.
And they make a lot of money.
Yeah, but, yeah. But then, some people just, like, it's just, like, drags their life, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, that's just no fun. Like, there's so many better things to do in the world. And mm-hmm. I do wish our country was set up a little bit better for entrepreneurship, like, I feel like free,
for trying. And
yeah. Trying. Well, yeah. I feel like free healthcare for everybody would be, like, amazing, because I know so many people who just stay at their dumb job because they get healthcare, and
yes.
maybe they have a pre-existing condition, or they have a kid who's got, I mean, one of my friends has a kid who's in a wheelchair and he needs to have healthcare, you know? And so he has to stay there, even if it makes him miserable. And it's just like, oh, I wish, like, we could take that dynamic out. Because I feel like it would be just, like, an interesting, inspiring life for so many more people. Like, mm-hmm. if you could just give people the option to, like, shift and create and do different things, it would be so cool.
So tell me, like, the Wildwood Music Festival, which you can go to wildwoodmusicfestival.com, right?
Yeah, Music Fest, yeah. Wildwoodmusicfest.com, yeah.
Is it just musicfest.com?
Yeah.
I just carried on when I wrote it down.
Hey, what a
festival. I mean, I was looking at
the It'll site. Come up. It'll come up.
Yeah. But, I mean, for what I've heard from friends that have been here, you know, Lyndon, Jerry,
yeah,
and
yeah.
Lara, like, I've
that's
heard
been super fun.
It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I do that with my friend Katie, who's lives here in Wilhelmina, too. So we do it together. So we put it on together. So she does most of the music booking for that one.
Uh-huh.
So this is my first, like, going into music booking for the summer. So it's been kind of a learning curve, but it's been fun. So
yeah.
But yeah, the music fest is great. It's about 1,500 people or so. And we haven't done it because of COVID. And this year we maybe could have done it, but it was just, like, too hard to plan by the time things were opening up, it was
by
just
the
like,
time you felt like you could.
Yeah, it was too hard to get, like, I mean, we started booking bands, like, in January for, like, a July show. So, it, you know, everything was still pretty shut down in January. So it was, like, hard to know, like, what was going to be happening and who was going to be coming through and all that stuff. So
yeah.
we just let it go. And we have like the permitting and stuff that we do for that show takes a few months to like pull off. So, because you can't just do it, you have to permit everything. And,
yeah, what is involved in the permitting?
We have to do the Yamhill County permit schedule, which is like a mass gathering permit. So we have to pull, that's the big one that comes through the county. But then we also have to have our liquor permit. And then we have to also go through like ODOT because we're on a highway. So we have to get the ODOT permit.
For the traffic?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Since we're on a highway, they have to sign off on it and a railroad. So those both have to get notified. And the railroad.
Why the railroad? Oh,
we have
right
a railroad.
Here.
Yeah.
A railroad
they have to cross
right
the tracks. So we have to notify the railroad. And then that's part of the ODOT permit, really. And yeah, so it's kind of like, and they have to go in certain sequence, like one has to go before the other, and then you have to have your insurance in place before you can get A, B, C, D. So it's like, this is kind of a pain,
yeah, you know?
So it takes a little bit, and like sometimes the commissioners only meet every month, so you have to like get on their agenda and da-da-da, so, and then you have to notify the neighbors, and that takes 6 weeks, so you have to make sure you have all this time ahead of time to,
gotcha.
So we usually start doing that like in March, so
oh, okay.
We start getting the permits rolling.
And when is the festival usually?
Usually the third weekend in July.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so a little later.
Oh, I actually tried to come last year.
Oh, whoop.
Or the year before. I guess before COVID.
Oh, yeah,
the year
yeah.
Before COVID. And then I can't remember. I had something come up, but I had friends that came and I wanted to come. And so you're I'll like, I'll be here. Eventually I'll be
dun,
here.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
You can do it. I believe in you.
When I do come, I'm going to hunt you down. And I'm gonna
I'll be here.
Dun, dun, dun.
I'll be here. I'll probably be crazy and busy. Put you to work.
give me a job. I'm used to work. I can handle it.
Right.
Okay. So woofers.
Oh, yeah.
How do you spell woofer?
W-O-W-O-O-F-E-R-S. F-E-R-S. Worldwide Opportunities on Organic Farms. So,
yeah, tell me about that.
It's a cool program. We haven't really done it since the pandemic, mm-hmm. mostly because
our
kid's young and isn't vaccinated, and we just haven't gotten back. We thought about getting back on it, but we don't really have like a some woof hosts have like a separate housing situation, but we don't really. And we have like a little cabin that they could sleep in, but we eat together and stuff, and they kind of become, it's sort of like a quote unquote cultural exchange. So it's like a work exchange program. So people come and stay, and sometimes they can stay for, I mean, our shortest one came down from Portland for like a day because she just wanted to come and help. And she was like a friend of a different woofer. So she came down to help for like a day. And then the longest one,
so these are like farmhands that are coming.
Yeah, yeah. So she just like volunteered some time to help. And then the longest one, I think, was, I mean, really, I think Jenny's probably our longest one. And they've been in and out for 4 years. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, well, it comes and goes, you know. Like.
And so what's the benefit for them? What's the benefit for you?
Well, they get like room and board taken care of. So they get a place to sleep and food. And then they help like usually 4 to 6 hours, like 4 to 5 days a week. So depends on what they're doing or whatever. Uh-huh. So, yeah. So I, you know, but mostly it's like, I mean, like we had these guys from France a few years ago and they were awesome and they were here for 3 months and they just, it was amazing just to like have like three guys from France just come and hang out for a couple months, you know, like
yeah,
it was just
friends.
Cool. Yeah. You know, yeah. Like I still connect with those guys on Facebook. We have a big thread that we chit chat on sometimes, you know, see how COVID's going with them and checking them out and saying hi and all that stuff. You know, it's just fun to like see their lives expand and keep going, you know, and they're like all engineers. So sometimes it's people who are not interested in farming at all. Like, they're just looking for something to do. Like we had
cultural experience.
Yeah.
Like you're saying.
Yeah. It's super fun. Like we had these two gals that came and they had grown up together, but then like they were living in different cities and they were both coming for spring break. They were in college and they were coming for spring break and their spring breaks happened to be at the same time. So they flew in and did their spring break with us.
How cool.
Who the hell does that? Come and work on a farm for spring break? That's so weird. And they were like from like,
I don't know,
Maryland or somewhere, you know?
Disney World and all those.
Yeah, yeah. It's like so weird.
Working on a farm.
I know, yeah.
The farm.
But they were funny and they were hilarious and they had a blast, you know? So it was just like something to do, you know?
So and do like, they sign up on that worldwide site?
Yeah, yeah. So we're a host farm and then they can sign up as woofers and you just reach, you can look at farms different across the country and and people have profiles and stuff. And then there's like a rating system. So
like an Airbnb for workers.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So there's like a, you know, you feel a little safer sometimes, I think, when you can tell like a farm's got a bunch of different ratings and, mm-hmm. and vice versa, you know, mm-hmm. like you can tell, like usually most people have ratings, but sometimes they don't, you know, like they're new or whatever. It's kind of hard to get started. So yeah, but it's fun. I kind of miss that actually, because it's kind of one of those things that like sort of keeps you young and like, you start getting, as you get older, you just stop like, you just get your own like biases and you get your own things in your own life and you kind of stop like paying attention to like what's happening in youth, you know? And
yeah,
it's been really interesting, like just learning about different things that like children are doing, you know, like, and young adults, like it's, you know, like the whole, you know, it's opened my eyes a lot for like, you know, like trans people and stuff like that. Like it just, like it had never touched my life before. And it, now I have like one of our woofers is trans, you know, and so it's interesting, you know, it's like you, stuff that you would never like normally have like as part of your daily life. And then you just have like this experience with people and it opens your mind a little bit differently to like, oh, that's how they're doing their life, you know? And I didn't grow up with that having much of a, you know, wasn't much of, didn't have those experiences at all, you
didn't
know?
Didn't have a statement in your life.
Yeah, yeah.
Your own personal experience, you know, or your family.
Most, like, a little bit of people were like maybe bisexual in like college or whatever, but that was pretty much it, you know? And now there's all these different, like, different gender identities and sexuality identities. So it's kind of an interesting time to learn about it, I think. And you know, I think it's kind of cool to learn, like, what, I don't really understand all of it, but I don't need to, you know, like,
yeah,
it's kind of,
like,
yeah, you don't need to know. It doesn't affect my life. Like I don't, it's their life, not mine, you know? But it's interesting to like see their experiences and how it's kind of shifted their reality.
Yeah. To connect,
and, you know? Yeah. It's cool. So
yeah, for me, I like in so many of those aspects, it's been fascinating to learn the way that people see and experience the world.
Yeah.
And
it's like so open in so many ways. Right.
And acknowledging, you know, my experience isn't their experience.
Yeah.
So what is your experience? Like just trying to understand from the perspective of I don't get it because it isn't my experience, but I get that I don't get it.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Share more. Tell me more about your experience.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting to see. So I think like those are kind of the fun parts about the experience with WIF, because they just are outside of your normal comfort zone. And I think for them too, because like, you know, they might have grown up in a very religious family or something and, mm-hmm. and not had like an experience with somebody like me, you know, or even just how their family was just, you know, you grew up in a certain way and you don't realize how many different ways there are to live out there. Like the, you know what I mean? Like there's so many different ways to live.
So
and,
many.
And I think it's actually pretty cool to like go out and just experience how many different, to see the different lives that people choose. And even if they're all farms, they're still like, you know, so much diversity just in that alone. Like some people are doing goats or chickens or nothing or whatever, you know.
How were you raised? Like, what was your upbringing like? Where were you raised?
In Minnesota.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, kind of. I mean, I've got, my mom was, my parents got divorced when I was 3. And I've got a twin sister and an older sister who's like, she was 2 years older than I. So, yeah, so 2 sisters and my mom, and my dad was like in the picture kind of, but he wasn't like, you know, like a, it's like a father of the 80s, which was like, they kind of got off the hook, honestly. So like he paid minimal child support and then they got to like show up on the weekends sometimes, kind of show up on the weekends and like, oh, I help.
Yeah,
but you know, my mom busted her tail and did a lot for us. And so she really worked super, super hard. So
what did you learn from her?
I mean, I think I kind of get some of my creativity from her, but also just my ability to live on the edge, I think is from her, you know,
there was no
for
way
better
around
or worse.
She was on the
for
edge.
Better or worse. Like it's part of a trait of her. I mean,
you know, I didn't get my, I should have got, oh my God, there's the cat again. I think, was it?
That was Gerald, yeah.
Gerald, what are you doing?
My God.
Being Gerald.
Being Gerald, climbing the wall.
Gerald,
literally
what are
climbing
we doing?
Gerald.
Being Gerald.
Being Gerald. He's very cute.
So back to what you were saying about your mom. Just that.
I think she was resilient, you know, like she powered through and God damn, it wasn't easy for her. I'm sure of it. You know, like, I mean, I don't know how she did it. She had three kids and I mean, I have one kid. I can barely survive, you know, like, I like don't know how she did it. How she wasn't so freaking exhausted every day.
She like, was.
I mean, she was, I'm certain she was, you know, but you know, she still claims that it was like the best part of her life, you know, was raising children. And I think she's lying, but I think, I'm just kidding.
Crazy. I've had so much craziness recently with kids, you know, teenagers going through stuff.
Yeah,
and
just, I was a little shit on teenager. So.
Well, and just the struggles that they deal with and trying to make peace with themselves and figure out how to go about life. And there's days when I'm like, y'all, I feel really outnumbered by you. But I would never trade it. Like, it's the most interesting thing. Like, they give such rich perspective and diversity. And they are mirrors like nothing else to me.
You're right.
Right?
You're like, I'm not sure I'm ready to reach that. Oh, thanks for throwing that at me.
I wasn't ready to see that today. Because you waited until tomorrow.
Like, give me a little heads up. It was coming.
Okay, brace myself. Right. So I'm going to show you this part about you. And
we're going to have to deal with it tonight.
Right.
I know you're really tired from working all day. But sorry.
But too bad. Work out in there. Well, okay. Do you have, in closing, I guess, I like to ask, do you have a quote that you love?
Oh, well, you should ask me this ahead of time. My quote would be, shut up and make art.
Shut up and make art. I love it.
Because, like, sometimes you just got to shut the fuck up and do it. Like, and shut yourself up. I'm not talking about, like, voice necessarily. But, like, just stop getting in your head so much, you know, and just do it. Like, instead of, like, thinking about doing it forever, just shut up and do it. Like, even if it just means, like, sitting with a sketchbook and or a piece of paper or whatever.
Doodle.
You know, doodle. Do something. Like, you know, you can overthink about how you're going to do something in 10 years. You need this big plan and you're going to do. But, like, you're not actually doing it. Like, if you just do it and you got to start doing it. Like, I mean, when I start making art and I'm just like pissy about being in the studio, like, I don't want to be here, you know, it's just like, why would anyone do that? I don't know. But I'm like, you know, sometimes you're just like not in it. Like, you just want to do it, but you have to do it. Like, I've got shit coming up or a deadline or something. And so I'm like, so I just force myself into making like frames because I hate making frames. Like, I hate milling the frames. It's like tedious. It's the pain in the ass. I hate it. And I'd rather do anything else. So, but like, I get into it and I start like using my hands and like feeling it and being in the studio space, or I start cleaning. Like, cleaning is always like inspiring too because I don't want to clean either. So like, I'd rather be making art, right? So if I can like trick myself into like sort of starting, I can usually get beyond the hurdle of like, I don't want to, whatever, you know.
I was just listening to a podcast recently and the gentleman being interviewed, he was talking about, you know, like always being in that zone or that space. It's just not realistic.
Yeah.
You can't wait to be in the zone to get in the zone.
Right.
You have, that's where the discipline of just starting.
Yeah.
Like just start. Just do it. Like,
and even if it's something tiny, like, I think sometimes we put these big obstacles in front of us. Like, I have to write the novel, you know, or whatever. And just like, no, you know, actually don't. Like, you could just write a letter.
Ideas.
You could just write a letter to somebody or something small. It doesn't have to be some major, like, masterpiece because nobody's, I mean, realistically, like, how many of us are ever going to get that shit done? You know, like, I think we burden ourselves with these big obstacles instead of taking, like, you know what? I'm just going to do something that makes me happy, and I'm going to just sit here and make a piece of art or draw or read or whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I'm kind of easily inspired, I think, sometimes, too. Like, I can literally, like, look at a dictionary and be like, ooh, I've got an idea. You know, like, whether I do the idea or not is different, but, like, if you feel like you don't have any ideas and you're just, like, torturing yourself, like, maybe just start doing one of those menial things. Like, maybe it's cleaning up your space or something like that. And maybe the ideas will just start coming, you know?
Yeah. As you're cleaning.
Yeah. Elizabeth Gilbert. Did you ever listen to that? She was the one who wrote Eat, Pray, Love. Mm-hmm. But she did this this TED Talk. And every once in a while I listen to it just because it's just kind of a cool TED Talk. But she, but her like thing is like she shows up. Like her job is to show up. And like she did her part, she showed up, and like the universe has to do the rest, right? Yeah. So like her job is to be there. But it was actually a really great, inspiring talk.
Oh, I love listening.
She's
to her.
Really great, and she's but she was just like, you know, I did my part. Like, where are you? What the hell? I'm here, you know. But
I'll get it from you. I'll get the link and
I do listen to it like every couple of years just because I think she's cool, and it does inspire me because it's like it talks about like the creativity, it's not like so about you. It's like the creativity is like the creative genius is like floating around and you just happen to be the one that sits there and grabs it, you know? Yeah. Like if it doesn't go to you, it goes to somebody else, you know, or something. So it's kind of a cool, like, instead of being so like pressure is all on me, you know, it's like the pressure is on like whoever. Like,
not.
Yeah, it's not like, it's just you showed up and did your part. And if you're there, like sometimes you're doing your work and you might get that like stroke of genius just boom right on you, you know? Yeah. So it's kind of, it's a cool theory.
I love it.
Yeah. But yeah.
And then one thing I have going on Spotify is the Ruthie podcast playlist. Ooh. And it's just a combination of songs of women I've interviewed, you know, about like a song that says something of you, your life, what inspires you, what expresses what you feel.
Oh, geez. Song. Mm-hmm. Who to pick? Really, the big one that's coming is Aretha Franklin. Like, I don't know why. She's like, it's not like I sit there and listen to Aretha Franklin very often, but like, of course, the Respect song is always great. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of, I mean, it doesn't have to be a woman power, right?
Yeah, it doesn't have to be woman power. I mean, I love Eminem sometimes. Like, I'm like, lose yourself.
Eminem in the studio is kind of fun sometimes.
Wait, say that again, Eminem.
Eminem in the studio. Like, I kind of like sometimes like have like studio rotation with Eminem, yeah.
Oh, man, like Lose Yourself. Oh,
yeah.
You know, there's so many of his songs, and I'm like, I can actually relate. You're saying what I feel.
Oh, what was I singing the other day? I was singing like a Violent Femmes song. Oh, maybe we could do that one. Kiss Off.
Kiss Off. You know,
I was like singing every lyric, like one could you be two for my family. And Dan's like, wow, you know this song. I'm like, fuck yeah, I know this song. Like, it's a Kiss Off this song all the time.
I love it. And finally, if there was a message in the stars that you could write, which you kind of said, but.
It wouldn't be Kiss Off.
Shut up and do art.
Shut up and make art.
Shut up and make art.
Yeah.
But anything else that you'd like to say?
I don't think maybe be gentle on yourself.
Yeah.
I think people like sometimes are too hard on themselves and also like keep pushing forward. Like the vision might not come together like now, but it might come together in 3 years. But like, if you take like a baby step now, like, I mean, to build this cidery thing up here, like I first had to build the road, you know, like I had to widen the road and I had to spend the money and pay for the stupid road, which is like the worst thing to pay for. Like who wants to pay money on like a fucking road? Like, I don't want to dump like thousands of dollars on some road, but like literally I couldn't move the building up here without the stupid road. So I had to like do the road. I was like, I don't want to do the road. Like I would have done that last, but like, you know, but sometimes you got to kick down a little money and like believe that like the rest of it will follow if you just spend like a little bit here and then do a little bit of like finagling here and kind of push forward a little bit at a time. I used to be worse about this where I would have like a big thing that I wanted to do, like a big, big dream, you know, and then I'd just be like greatly disappointed when it didn't happen. But like, but then in like hindsight, you're like, oh, but like some of it happened, you know,
some
like
of it led to this other.
Yeah.
Dream.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, you know, like, I mean, I remember my dad, like at one point he was like, what do you want for Christmas or whatever? And I was like, oh, I want a power tool. Like I want a skill saw. And he's like, what?
You're nine. Sorry.
I was like 18, but he's like, wow, you want a skill saw? I'm like, yeah, because a tool, like can get me to like so many other things, you know? It's like, if I have a tool, I can use it to build something else, you know? And I was just like super excited about it. And he's like, wow, I guess that's cool. I had no idea I was influencing you, you know?
That's like, so cool.
Yeah. So he started buying me power tools at every holiday, you know? He's like, well, I got you this drill. I got you this miter box saw or whatever. Like, awesome, you know?
That's
so
really
it's like
neat.
Some of those tools I still have, you know? So it's kind of fun.
That's so
but
cool.
I think like sometimes it's the baby step that leads you into a different direction. Because honestly, like 10 years ago, you'd ask me if I would be doing this. I'd be like, what? No. Crazy person. Side,
right? Farm.
Tasting room. Elk. No, you know? Why would I do that? Yeah. But yet, here I am. So, and who knows what's going to happen in 10 more years. I don't know.
Right. You and know? Just roll with it.
Yep. Yep.
Like, trusting that the universe will provide.
It might be part of this. It might be part of something else. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if people want to come here and try your cider and your wine.
Do it.
But
only in the summer.
Only
on the weekends.
Because otherwise you're going to be looking at it.
Or maybe call me. Maybe I can squeeze you.
So how do they reach you?
They can find me on the website. Probably the Art and Science website. It's probably the best one. artandsciencenw.com. And it's just kim@artandsciencenw.com for my email.
Okay.
So that's probably the best way.
And is there a phone number?
Oh, yeah. 503-560-0673. And text me because I never, ever answer my phone. So
okay. Now you know. Now you know.
It's the truth. You want to actually talk to me, send me a text and say, I want to call you. I'll say, okay.
I'm calling in 30 seconds.
Yeah. Shit. I'm not ready.
Right.
As long as you don't want to FaceTime me, we're good. FaceTime me, like, I have to put my lipstick on. This isn't really going to work for me in 30 seconds.
I need 33 seconds. And then wildwoodmusicfest.com.
Yep.
Check that out.
Yep.
We could all converge here.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Very cool. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks. It'd be fun.
I loved it. Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
So freaking cool.
Thank you for joining me today. Would you hit the subscribe button and follow along? And then would you please pause and leave a 5-star review? I'd be extra grateful. It helps me tremendously. You can follow me on Instagram @TheRuthiePodcast. I'll keep you posted there. And remember to check out the Ruthie Podcast playlist on Spotify. Now, go make today great. Explore, experience, and take it all on the inside and ask now.